नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, Verse 30.
Tasya daitya pati putras chatvara paramadbhuta prahradho bhunmahamstekshang gurnair mahadupasaka. Tasya daitya pati putrash chatvara paramadbhuta praradho bhum maham steksham urnair mahadupasaka. Tasya daitya pati putrash chatvara paramadbhuta praradho bhun maham steksham unair mahadupasaka. Mothers, tasya daitya pati putrash chatvara paramadbhuta praradho bhun maham steksham urnair mahadupasaka. Tasya, of him Hiranyakashipu, daityapati, the king of the daityas, that means demons, putraha, sons, chatvaraha, four, parama adbhutaha, very qualified and wonderful, praradaha, the one named Prahlada, abhut, was mahan, the greatest, teksham, of all of them, urnai, with transcendental qualities, mahat upasaka, being an unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Jai. Translation. Hiranyakashipu have four wonderful, well-qualified sons, of whom the one named Prahlada was the best. Indeed, Prahlada was a reservoir of all transcendental qualities because he was an unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana sarvaitar gurnais tatra samasate suraha. Quote, and one who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna, all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods are consistently manifest. End quote. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 18, Verse 12. Prahlada Maharaj is praised herein for having all good qualities because of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, a pure devotee who has no motives has all good qualities, material and spiritual. If one is spiritually advanced, being a staunch, liberal devotee of the Lord, all good qualities are manifest in his body. On the other hand, harava bhaktasya kuto mahagunaha, if one is not a devotee, even if he has some materially good qualities, they have no value. That is the verdict of the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So now we're hearing about Hiranyakashipu's sons, of which Prahlad Maharaj is described here as Parama Adbhuta. Parama Adbhuta means supremely wonderful. This is one adjective used to describe Prahlad Maharaj. And the other is here just mentioned as Gunayar, which Prabhupada translates having all transcendental qualities. So Hiranyakashipu had four sons. Tasya Daityapati Putrash Tatwara. He had four sons. The word Parama Adbhuta might apply to all of them. So it says here, well qualified sons. But of them, Prahrado Abhut Mahansh Tesham. Of these four supremely wonderful sons, the greatest of them, of all of them, Tesham means of all of them, so of these four, the greatest one was Prahlad Maharaj, Mahams. The one who was greatest of the four was Prahlad Maharaj. Why? Gunayar, because he had all transcendental qualities. And how is it that he had all transcendental qualities? Mahat Upasaka. Because he was an unalloyed devotee or a great devotee, a great worshiper of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the verse, that's what it says. And in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he is mentioning that those, he quotes this very famous verse, which is also Prahlad Maharaj's verse from the Bhagavatam. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana. So anyone who has a kinchana bhakti for Krishna, Akinchana Bhakti is also known as Uttama Bhakti, or topmost devotion to Krishna. It has to be qualified because now especially the word bhakti is very popular and it's misapplied in so many ways. Just like someone may say, I have bhakti for my asana practice. This is very popular actually. People do asana practices, yoga. They say, I have bhakti for my asana practices. I have bhakti for my family. So what need is there for bhakti for God? I have bhakti for my family. Or I have bhakti for my sense gratification of various types, self-centered or self-extended. So when you use any, actually just in general, when you're using language, you have to define your terms. Otherwise, I may be saying one thing and you may be thinking of another thing. Just like if I say bhakti, I'm thinking one thing, and you hear another thing. And then the whole rest of my discussion, I'm using the word bhakti. And I'm thinking, oh, they understand what I'm saying. But you're getting an opposite message, perhaps, if I don't define my terms. You understand? So many times this verse, for example, it says here, those who are devoted to Krishna. This is like Prabhupada's translation. For one who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna. So one may be thinking, I have unflinching devotional faith in Krishna. Therefore, I have all the qualities of the demigods. Just like many times it may be thought, because I'm a devotee, I have all the good qualities of the demigods. And what is your definition of devotee? I wear a tilak, I wear a dhoti, I adorn the sikha, and I use all the jargon of a devotee. Therefore, I have all the good qualities. So therefore, it has to be clarified what is meant when you use the word devotee or bhakti. So the verse says here, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana. For those who have akinchana bhakti, so specific word issues, the word akinchana is a synonym for uttama bhakti or shuddha bhakti, like this. So topmost bhakti. And that topmost bhakti is defined in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, anya abhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyanavritam. Anuku yena Krishna nushilanam bhaktir uttama. This is a very deep verse. We don't have time to go through it here. In our bhakti month, we're going to really dig into this verse. If just by understanding this verse, your devotional service will skyrocket. Anyway, the verse says, for those who are constantly endeavoring for the satisfaction of Krishna, or with favorableness, they have a favorable attitude, not allowing their devotion to be eclipsed by impersonal knowledge or materialistic activity, etc., then these persons are said to have topmost devotion. So this akinchana bhakti has six characteristics. This is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The first two characteristics are called as kleshagni and shubhada. Kleshagni means akinchana bhakti removes the causes of all suffering. So living entities are suffering in this world. Yes, I suspect many of you also are suffering on a regular basis. That's just a guess. I could be wrong, but I guess that you might be suffering. So where are the causes of suffering? Rupa Goswami says causes of suffering are three. Sinful activity, and essentially doing pious things is also sinful. Anyway, we're not going to elaborate on that right now. On sinful activity, and what's the cause of sinful activity? Material desires. So then that is also mentioned. It's called as bija. And what is the cause of material desires? Ignorance. So ignorance is the root cause of suffering. So akinchana bhakti removes sinful actions because it removes material desires by destroying ignorance. So akinchana bhakti is called as kleshagni, or it is one of the characteristics of pure bhakti. And the other is shubhada. Shubhada means the giver of auspiciousness. Just like Narada means the giver of Narayana. Da, like the dati, means to give. So Narada is the giver of Narayana. Are you hearing? Are you understanding my language? Everyone's awake. So Narada means the giver of Narayana. And kleshada is an adjective describing the body. So the body is called as kleshada, the giver of kleshas, miseries. That we have practical experience on a daily basis. And bhakti is called as shubhada, the giver of shubha, auspiciousness. So Rupa Goswami says this auspiciousness is of four types. Actually, the first three types are more or less the same. They're qualities that bhakti bestows upon a person. The first one is that those who have bhakti is dear to everyone. This is one quality mentioned. And the second one is everyone becomes dear to the person who has bhakti. Understand? So those who have real bhakti, then they are attractive for everyone. Just like Lord Chaitanya was walking in Jarikanda forest, and all the animals, they became attracted by his devotion, and they began to do Nam Sankirtan. Even the deer and the tigers, there's a picture, it's mentioned also in the CC. They were embracing and kissing each other. You can imagine, that would be definitely remarkable to see something like that. The tiger kissing the deer. Yes, due to the influence of Lord Chaitanya's bhakti. So all the animals became deer. So one who has bhakti becomes attractive for everyone, unless you're just real envious, because you ain't got bhakti. So then you might not be so attracted on account of envy. But generally, this is the idea. And also, for those who have bhakti, everyone becomes dear to that person. This is described by Rupa Goswami. And then the third quality mentioned by Rupa Goswami is that he has all the good qualities. And then this verse is quoted, Yasasti Bhaktir Bhagavati Kinchana. He has all the good qualities, Prabhupada's translation, of Krishna and the demigods are consistently manifest. That's the third one. Has all the good qualities. Actually, Jiva Goswami, in his Durgama Sangamani commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, says that the first two are also qualities, but because of their outstanding nature, they were mentioned separately. So in other words, because someone who is dear to everyone, everyone is dear to him, that's pretty extraordinary. So because of that extraordinary quality, it was mentioned separate from the third point, which is also just qualities. So those who have a Kinchana Bhakti, then they have all these qualities naturally manifest. The idea here is that these qualities, in the material world, there are also qualities of the material nature. So how do you know the distinction between mundane and transcendental qualities? The soul proper is in a state of somewhat neutrality. Therefore, he's called as the Tathashta Shakti. He has no inherently good qualities as such, or bad qualities. He's neutral, Tathashta. As Krishna is also, in some sense, neutral. So then, in order for the soul to be decorated with qualities, he has to be invested with bhakti. And bhakti has qualities that are inherent to it. Just like heat and light are inherent to fire. So also, bhakti has qualities that are inherent to it. Actually, it's coming from the transcendental region. Bhakti, like Krishna, and everything in Krishna's world is completely transcendental. So in the spiritual reality, there's also transcendental names, transcendental form, transcendental qualities, and transcendental activities. In the material world, there's also name, form, qualities, and activities, but they're not transcendental, they're phenomenal. And as such, they are subject to death at any moment, without notice. I think Mother Lakshmi Moni, when I was in Vrindavan, she said this, and I really appreciated that. She used the language, subject to change without notice. Change without notice, like getting kicked out of your apartment. That was the image that I got, you know? You didn't pay the bills for a few months, and you're thinking you're getting away with it, and all of a sudden you come home and all your furniture's out on the street. The landlord called the moving company, threw all your stuff out on the street. Subject to change without notice. So that is the nature of the material name, form, particularly qualities and context here, and activities. They're subject to change without notice. Nasato vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sataha. Krishna says that the nature of matter is that there is no permanent existence. That is the nature of matter. And the nature of spirit or sat, the transcendental, is that there is no change. So in other words, material things do not endure and spiritual things do not change. So the nature of the transcendental Nam Rup Guna Lila is that it's without change and it's inherent to that spiritual plane. So anything on that spiritual plane inherently has Nam Rup Guna Lila that's eternally related to it. You understand? I don't know what I'm speaking. I'm just, whatever's coming from my... Basically, the Naru Guna Lila of the spiritual reality is eternally related to that plane. So there can never be any separation of the Naru Guna Lila from the entities of that plane. They're eternally related. Just as heat and fire are eternally related, it can never be any separation. Very simple point. Whereas in the material world, there isn't an eternal relation of the Namrup Guna Lila. For example, someone may be called as Padma Lochana, which means lotus eye, but he might be blind. So a blind person isn't exactly lotus eye. A mother may see it like that, but the rest of us won't see it like that. So his name, Padma Lochana, is not eternally related to his form, for example. There is no actual eternal relation there. Actually, there's no relationship whatsoever. It was just a mother sentimentality, you know, like that, for example. Similarly, someone may be called Guna, I want to say Guna Grahi. There's a word, possessing all the good qualities. What's the word? Kripa. It comes up, actually, in another verse. It's going to be described that Prahlad Maharaj has all the good qualities, something internally. Anyway, so someone may have a name like that. What's a name that means like possessing all good qualities or not satisfying? Guna? Giddy? Guna Nidhi. Okay, yeah, that's a good one. So suppose you get it at the time of initiation. Your name is Guna Nidhi. No! Because that's a lot of pressure to live up to. And you know that that name is not having any eternal relation with your actual existential situation. Your conscience may be in the gutter, so you're not actually having all the good qualities. Then you get the name Guru Nidhi. No! And then every time you do something nonsense, then people, why did you get Guru Nidhi? What a bad choice like that. There'd be some criticism. Because there isn't an eternal relation with the name and the material form. You understand? Similarly, the activities. You have name Guru Nidhi, but the activities may be all opposite of anything good, all nonsense you're doing. Then your activities are not having eternal relation with the name and with the actual qualities. So that is the nature of material things. There is no eternal relation of the Namruguna Lila with the Jiva in the material world. As such, using Mother Lakshmi Moni's language, which I appreciate it, they are subject to change without notice. That makes it very clear. So in this verse, it's mentioned that if you're not a devotee, Harava Bhaktasya Kato Mahaguna, you don't have any good qualities. We're strict on this point. Someone may be looking very nice, but they say, is he a devotee? Oh, he's not a devotee. He has no good qualities. Strict. We have strict standard. No good qualities. Even if they're doing very nice things, we say, we don't appreciate. He has no good qualities. But he's feeding people and opening hospitals. No good qualities. That is evidence. Instead of worshiping Krishna, just like, what is his name? The rich one for Bill Gates. He's a philanthropist, like a pretty prominent philanthropist. He gives a lot of money. He doesn't give it to any religious organizations, but he goes to, you know, Save the Children Foundation, Save the Wells, this and that. He's a very charitable person. But what is our opinion of him? No good qualities. Strict. No good qualities. Why? Because he doesn't worship Krishna. And they're subject to change without notice. All you have to do is say, like Prahlad Maharaj, Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu, we'll later on see this. Hiranyakashipu will be having tears in his eyes. And he'll pick up Prahlad very affectionately. He'll smell his head. That's apparently an affection exchange in Vedic culture. The father will smell the head of the child, Prabhupada mentions. You'll see this coming up. And you think, wow, Hiranyakashipu is such a good father. And then he says, my dear Prahlad, what is the best of all subject matters you learn? And he says, well, my dear father, king of the demons, I learned that you should stop your program of sense gratification and go to Vrindavan and worship Vishnu. Ah! And like throws his son across the head. Subject to change without notice. Therefore, we don't accept. They have good qualities, actually. Why? Then the verse is, Prabhupada doesn't quote the next line of the verse, Mano retena nasato dabato bihi. Because their qualities are mental, on the mental platform. So the mental platform means always in flux. So there is no question of you maintaining good qualities throughout every situation. So we can't really blame Hiranyakashipu. That is natural. Something disturbed his mind and he reacted. That's totally natural. We would do the same thing if someone says something like that to us and we didn't want to hear it. We also would react in a very similar way. So it's natural. So phenomenal Namrup Guna Lila does not relate to the Jiva. When the Jiva is infused with bhakti, then the Namrup Guna Lila is eternally related to that Jiva who is infused with bhakti. Therefore, in any situation, all wonderful qualities can be manifest. According to his desire, he can reveal that quality or conceal it. So it's not necessary that a devotee will always manifest all the good qualities before our purview. He can conceal that from our vision, according to his desire. But they are eternally related to him because of being infused with akinchana bhakti. Because of worshiping Krishna, maharupastaka. So then one is encouraged to become a devotee. We're not encouraged, per se, to cultivate good qualities independently. That will be on the material platform, not eternally related to us. We're encouraged to infuse our being more and more with devotion. And the qualities that inhere in devotion will naturally manifest in us if we are infused with devotion. So therefore, the encouragement is always for cultivating bhakti. and not for cultivating good qualities per se, independently, try to be a nice person, try to be humble. That will be artificial. All it would take is one little statement that you don't like to hear, and then you will be showing your real quality of nonsense. So, but if our being is infused with bhakti, then the qualities that inherit in bhakti will manifest in us naturally. Therefore, we're encouraged to just increase the influence of bhakti in our heart by augmentation of shravanam and kirtan. The more shravanam and kirtan, the better. You know, if you do little, that's not so good. If you do a lot, very good. Because that means there will be an increase of the of real devotion in the heart. Therefore, naturally, good qualities will be manifesting. But in relationship to the Supreme Lord. Are there any questions? I went longer than I wanted. Yeah.
Slightly lofty question, but I'm just trying to understand the subject matter a little better. Since the topic is qualities, and you mentioned at one point, the soul ultimately is tathasta, he's neutral. And when there is the infusion of this, so that's why we see, but because there's an infusion of bhakti, he actually develops a spiritual personality. So in our process, as we become purified, we don't just become neutral like the like perhaps those who practice just yoga, but we actually develop a spiritual personality. So my question is this, that we often use the word bhakti, which we understand you define as anyabhalashtashanam, pure devotion. But I'm just wondering if that energy of devotion, which originates in Srimati Radharani, is then inserted into the aspiring sadhaka through the medium of some other associate in the spiritual world, and based on how or who is the one delivering that bhakti to this aspiring sadhaka, then that influences the development of their spiritual personality. This is not a complete speculation. I was thinking about Ayindapu's example of how he would say that, you know, a particular personality was the reason why he got an Ishopanishad in the first place in the 1970s. You remember he made that point. And even B.B. Madhav Maharaj once told me that the first Back to Godhead magazine he got had a picture of Rinda Devi on the front. And since then he knew that she's someone special, you know. So I'm just wondering if there's any... my question makes sense?
Generally, the type of devotion that one gets attracted to will follow the devotion of he, she, who distributed to us the seed of bhakti in the very beginning. Bhakti is only made possible by the fortuitous association of devotees. And there are different types of devotees possessing different levels of awareness of the Absolute Truth. And according to their awareness of the Absolute Truth, then generally, those who get that sort of association with that sort of devotee will develop that similar type of awareness and subsequent attraction to the Absolute Reality. So, in other words, if someone gets the association of a devotee who's, let's say, in the Sakya Rasa, then it will be seen that those who follow him will be similarly attracted. Or if they're in the Madhura Rasa, it'll be seen that those who follow them are similarly attracted to the Madhura Rasa. Therefore, there are different sampradayas in different rasas. And when you join a particular sampradaya, they preach about a particular deity, and they preach a particular path for achieving bhakti to that particular deity. So those who join that particular sampradaya, unsurprisingly, end up attracted to that deity and that path that leads to devotion for that deity of that type. So then, as it relates to the eternal associates in the spiritual world, that will depend on how that devotee is advancing in Krishna consciousness, how he will see his spiritual master or those who have distributed devotion to him. He will see them as representative of that particular associate of the Lord. That's described in the Jiva Dharma on Raghunath Das Babaji. He's preaching to Brajanath. Brajanath is in the Sakya Rasa. And Vijaya Kumar is in the Madhurya Rasa. And both of them will be seeing Raghunath Das Babaji according to their type of devotion. Although Raghunath Das Babaji has his own devotion to Krishna, but they're seeing their guru, he was Shiksha Guru, they're seeing their guru according to their heart's devotion. Like that, that's all I can say on it right now. There are more details, probably, but in order to avoid speculation, that's all I'll say now.
So this seed of bhakti that you mentioned, that seed that is first given to you, we may have gotten that seed in some previous life also.
Sure.
But is the idea that that seed also originates in the spiritual world? It has.
Well, who's carrying the seed to you though? A particular devotee in this world. That's why I said generally it follows that whoever gave you the seed in this world, you will follow a devotion of a particular type. And as you advance in your Christian consciousness, you may see that individual or individuals, as it were, you know, in relationship to a particular eternal associate because of the type of devotion you may be attracted to. But my point still remains the same. Are there any other questions, comments? Yeah, Jordan.
A question following up on that. Is it more so like who you meet like right away, or is it like the Diksha Guru that you take? I know you kind of talked about it a little bit, but is it both, or is it?
The reason I'm thinking is because Srila Prabhupada is often, in the CC, when he discusses a verse, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. So this verse explains that Brahmanda Brahmite, the conditioned Jiva, has been wandering all over the cosmos looking for sense gratification. He checks out the Swargaloka a little bit, see how that goes. Earth planet, checks out hell, checks out the animal species. And this way, he's been doing this for basically forever, beginningless time. And when that jiva becomes Bhagyavan, when he becomes fortunate, then he gets the chance to associate with a devotee, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai, the guru. And that guru gives him the bhakti lata bija, the seed of devotion, which is identified as faith of a particular type. So Prabhupada often uses verse to describe initiation. That's what I'm thinking. But it may be more to the story than that, because what if you got the seed in some previous life but you didn't achieve perfection? So it may work out that the type of guru that you get in this life or sangha you get in this life will be related to that type of devotion. I mean, in other words, the story is a little bit more colorful than that as such. It's not so black and white. Is it the first devotee? Well, why did you meet that particular devotee of a particular type? So there are a lot of inconceivable factors that come up. And plus, what are the type of subject matters are you hearing in the association of devotees? That's another thing. So there's a nice verse, Pravishta Karna Ranjana Swadnam Bhava Sororuham Dhanoti Shamalam Krishna. That describes that when the sound incarnation of Krishna, that's Srimad Bhagavatam, when it enters into the ear, through the ear, and then goes to the chamber of the heart, Swadnam Bhava Sororuham, it sits on a devotee's Bhava Sororuham. It says here, let's say, seat of devotion. And it kicks out, Dunoti Shamalam Krishna. It removes all impurities. So Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Supersoul is already in the heart. So what is the need for the sound incarnation of Krishna to come and be situated in the heart? What is meant by that? Supersoul is already in the heart. So Sri Vishwanath says that Supersoul is there, but he's neutral. So the sound incarnation of Krishna comes into the heart and makes the jiva attracted to him in a particular shorter way. So that verse seems to indicate that there's some also more to the story. It's not just that the devotee who you're associating with, but the types of sounds you're hearing in relationship to Krishna. And those sounds are themselves Krishna, and Krishna is drawing the heart towards him in a particular shorter way. So there's a lot going on to this story. It may not just have to do with the particular devotee one receives initiation from. There can be some background there also, like that. Somehow or other, it will be found that you're attracted to Krishna in a particular sort of way. And thank your lucky stars for that revelation. However it is coming. Yeah, Jitendra Prabhu, let's just say something.
Hare Krishna.
What is that verse Krishna says to Arjuna? If you fail to hear my words, you will have to act according to your false ego.
Yeah.
So we're always making decisions. I was thinking that Srila Prabhupada giving initiations, the devotees would pick out names for the candidates, right? And then Prabhupada would give him a name, but they told Srila Prabhupada this one devotee was always inclined to give other people instructions. And, you know, he wouldn't take instruction from other people. Mm-hmm. So Prabhupada gave him his name, and then at the end he says, let's say his name was Krishna Das. Well, he just said, Krishna Das, Das, Das. He kept saying that, you know. So he sort of drive it home. And then you were talking about that other devotee who got the name, and he was like, oh, can I live up to that? What was that again?
Gunanidhi, an ocean of good qualities.
Okay. And I was thinking, when I got initiated, I was late for the initiation, and then I didn't know if I really wanted to get initiated, you know. And then I was walking around the temple in Detroit, and then I call them bros. they were circumambulating me, you know, and they were ready to pounce on me, you know. And then Ramakali Kaylee and Siki Mahidi, who were, you know, from. You know Ramakali?
Yeah, of course.
So they came to my rescue, and they said, hurry up, you know. It's already started, you know. So then I go in for the initiation, and then Srila Prabhupada handed me my beads, and I went with my left hand. So my first instruction was Srila Prabhupada. He just went like, no, use your right hand, you know. So from the get-go, I was getting those instructions. And then I remember when I was a little kid, there was, they put me in a harness, like on a leash. I don't know, did you ever see a kid in a leash?
Yeah, I've seen, yeah.
Because he was always grabbing things, you know. And then I remember sticking keys into electrical outlets and knocking me off, you know, putting me in a hospital practically. So those kind of things were happening. So Prabhupada gave my name Jitendriya, so that was Indriya's senses, and Ja means one who controls. So I thought, this is going to be a lifetime of, you know, trial and tribulation. And then there was this other devotee. He was very tall. He was like, remember Abhimanyu?
Yeah.
He was like, what, 6'8" or something?
Yeah, something like that.
So this other devotee, his name, he was very tall. And, they had a name picked out for him. And then when the name was to be given, Prabhupada looked at it and he says, no, his name is going to be Jamavan, giant. So Prabhupada would sometimes change the names on the spot. But I don't know, those things came to mind. Hare Krishna.
Luke has a question.
Hare Krishna.
To this discussion of receiving the seed of bhakti from different devotees, I'm wondering, I've heard that like each subsequent rasa, from neutrality to active service, from active service to service and friendship, contains the rasas before it, within it. You know what I'm asking?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, theoretically, a devotee in each of these rasas may have disciples ranging from, you know, this to that, because those, the, let's say, less refined rasas are contained within his mood of worship also.
It means that someone who's in the Madhura rasa may have disciples in other sorts of rasas. That may be true. Who can say? But then if a devotee has to cultivate a particular rasa, he would need to receive instructions from, generally from those in that particular rasa, because the friendship in the Madhura rasa is not exactly the same as the friendship in the Sakya rasa, for example. So then he would have to seek able guidance if someone was in a lower rasa for cultivating that particular mood.
And this is a comment. I just remember reading in the Nectar of Devotion that on the level of bhava, the result of an offense to a devotee, or, you know, offensive chanting maybe, is that the quality of one's bhava would become degraded.
Yeah, this section I always say is highly theoretical. I feel that it's just to help us get a feel for how grave an offense is, because no example is ever given, nor will you be able to find an example in the shastras of someone who had bhav and it got decreased to a lower level of bhav because of an offense. So it just gives you a sense of how grave. For me, that statement, as far as I can understand at the present moment, is to help sadhakas get a feel for how grave offenses are. But because no example is actually given, we can't really say, we can't exactly conceive of how it's possible. Because above bhakta is a perfectional state. It's not complete, it's not siddhi, because there's still some influence of anartha in the form of aparad previously committed to the name. But it's not, it's perfection. You're seeing, you're having darshan of the Lord at the state of bhav. And you're, the shakti, the samvit tadini potencies of the Lord are infused with your being. So we can hardly see how it's even possible for a person to be offensive. And the fact that no example is given makes it all the more impossible to conceive of such a thing. So for me, my feeling for that section is that it's just helping us to get an appreciation of how grave offenses are. And for sadhakas who are aspiring for devotion, they better watch out. I know that this verse was quoted particularly Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Kinchana Krishna Das Babaji. It was very well known that he was attracted to the Sakya rasa from the very outset. And some followers of a particular guru, they were saying that because of his offense of not preaching, he was a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And so they said because of his offense of not preaching, because he was known to just always be absorbed in chanting the holy name. In fact, this story is quite famous and for several reasons. But one reason is that there was advertisement for persons to come and hear and chant in the moth. So this Akinchana Krishnadas Baba, he joined the moth and he was always seen chanting the kirtan or japa all throughout the day, like literally. And the disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta got irritated by that. And they took it to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He's always just chanting in the temple. How horrible, you know. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, we made advertisement for that. So he is coming doing that. What is the complaint? And he was quite famous. Even in Srila Radhanath Maharaj's book, The Journey Home, he mentions his meeting of Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji before he met the devotees of ISKCON. And one night they were staying up all night to chant. And Srila Radhanath Maharaj's appreciation at that time, he said it was clear this wasn't a practice for him. It was just, and same with Bibi Govinda Maharaj, who is now doing, we can perhaps get, if we get a chance, he is here tomorrow in the temple. He also speaks of his own personal experiences with Krishnadas Babaji. So he was a very exalted devotee. And but it was known that he was attracted to the Sakya rasa from the very outset. And so some persons of a particular group, they wrote, because of his offense to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta by not preaching, then he got his bhav decreased to Sakya bhav. That itself is a major offense, you know, that people can even say like that. The first of all, it is not known if he had bhava from the outset. It was known that he was cultivating a particular sadhana from the beginning. So that was not applicable there. And that statement is practically offensive because it's not like, oh, that's just a cowherd bhav, you know. Many of us would do well to have the cowherd bhav. You know, many of us would do well to have some bhav, any bhav, you know. Of course, we want a particular type of bhav eventually. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But to just pass comments about the eternal associates like that, you know, then your bhava won't decrease to a lower type. Your lack of bhava will decrease to no devotion whatsoever. You know, your sadhana bhakti will decrease to no sadhana, and your sojourn in material existence shall continue forevermore. So one has to be careful. That section is very, I always, when I read the section, I was like, where is the example? You know, and if someone says Bharat Maharaj, that itself is not correct. You know, it is clear that Prabhupada gives two reasons in the fifth canto, chapter 8, why Bharat Maharaj had bhav. He's the example of a bhav bhakta. And they said, well, because of his attachment to a deer, you know, he fell down. I can't believe anyone would be satisfied with that explanation, having read the Nectar of Devotion and understanding what bhav is. Prabhupada gives an explanation in the fifth canto, chapter 8. I believe it's verse 28 or 26. I'll have to see it. But he gives two reasons. One of the reasons follows Sri Vishwanath, and another reason follows Sanatana Goswami's understanding. One reason he gives for his attachment to a deer, his fall down in the form of attachment to a deer, is because of preaching to the future sadhakas, which is a point made by Sanatana Goswami in Brihadbhagavatamrita. And the other point that he gives is that Krishna wanted to augment his bhav, so by creating a situation of separation. Therefore, he gets a deer body with bhav consciousness, you know, awareness of his previous life of devotion, which is augmented his love for Krishna to the platform of prema. So that's not an example of that either. So then, because no example is given, the only way I can appreciate that section right now is that, you know, hey, sadhakas, watch out. This one is a major problem. That even if you're on the platform of bhav, you know, such as Lord Chaitanya performing Leela, I will not give Mother Shachi prema. Man, she already got prema. But I will not give Mother Shachi prema because of her offense to Advaita Acharya. But there's no question of that. So as Leela, as our acharyas point out, for sadhakas, hey, watch out for this one. Still we don't get it. It's like a huge sign with a skeleton on it and an X. Don't touch this, you know, 10,000 volts, you'll die. And someone is like, I don't know, let me just try it out and see if it's... Just like sometimes you hear that about the train tracks when we were kids, that it's electrical and you can die, but somehow you just want to like touch it just to kind of like, is it really? Because it just looks like metal. It doesn't look like it's that serious, you know, and you feel tempted, but, you know, because of previous samskaras of death, you're like, nah, I better not risk it. So similarly, there's all these, you know, danger sort of warnings. And here's, for me, that section, as far as my realizations at the present moment, it's just like one of those things. Watch out. Danger. But no example is given, so it's okay. Anything else? Anyone else wants to? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. We have a second day of vegetable cut-up for the Russian program tonight with Bibi Govinda Maharaj. So if we can all come downstairs and get going, we'll probably be done by breakfast. Thank you. Hare Krishna.